The following podcast is intended for mature audiences only. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of True Crime on Easy Street. Summertime is fast approaching.
Yeah. It's West Memphis May.
Yes, it is.
At True Crime on Easy Street.
It is. And we are barreling toward summertime.
Stumbling drunkenly into the summer months of 2024.
And it's pool season. Mm-hmm. It's beach season. It's, you know.
I'm headed to the beach soon.
Grilling out season. Mm-hmm.
What beach you headed to?
Orange, Gulf Shores, my favorite place in the world.
Beautiful beaches.
Beautiful there. Gulf Shores, Alabama. Mm-hmm.
We have some of the most beautiful beaches in the United States. Mm-hmm.
Gulf Shores is not a sponsor of the show, but they could be.
They could be.
Yeah.
Would love that.
Yeah. My name is Scott Wright. I am a mediocre journalist.
I'm Kelly Turner. I'm not a doctor.
I'm Katie Givens. I'm not a lawyer.
So go ahead.
No, you go first.
My father went to the beach.
Okay.
And he and I were talking about it, and it's been a little bit since he's been to the beach.
Right.
And he loves raw oysters.
Oh, same.
And this particular beach trip, he got a bad one.
Oh.
And it took him out for about a day. But
that's unfortunate.
He bounced back and he was fine. But he did tell me that he was probably just going to not have raw oysters anymore.
Katie, you like raw oysters?
Oh, it's literally top five favorite foods.
Okay. See, same. I like one. Mm-hmm. I can eat one on a cracker with some hot sauce.
I just
throw the whole thing in my mouth and chew it up, and then I've scratched that itch, and I'm finished.
Last time we went somewhere nice, and they had them, and Shane was videoing me eating them because I didn't even realize I was kind of dancing. I was sitting there
they're the perfect food to me. I'm sorry, I got too close. I got too excited about it and got in my microphone too much.
I hear that happens with raw oysters.
They're the perfect food because you can play with your food too. It's fun. The whole process is fun, and it's not as difficult as crab claws, where you got to work for it.
Or Oreo cookies, if you like to eat them in pieces.
Oreo cookies are fun.
Yeah.
They are very
Nabisco
fun.
Is not a sponsor of the show, but they could be.
They could be. But, and oysters could be too, I guess.
Yeah.
But I too love the raw oysters. And so that's made me, but you know, that's the only one Dad has ever got. That's the only one he's ever, but he said he'll probably just do them baked or grilled or something like that in the future.
Cook the bad out of the oyster. Speaking of food. So I've got this box of Honey Nut Cheerios at home, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I bought them 3 weeks ago.
Okay.
Haven't opened it yet.
Wow.
The milk that I bought to eat them with has already spoiled in the fridge.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you buy a half gallon?
I buy a half gallon of almond milk because it's...
Oh, it lasts longer.
It does last longer. And it's got a little bit of that... I think it's vanilla flavored almond milk. So that's delicious all by itself. And then you throw in some Honey Nut Cheerios. And every day I walk past, I have taken the box out of the cabinet and put it on... the out on the counter in the kitchen so that I'm reminded every day that I have it.
You got cholesterol problems?
No, I just love Honey Nut Cheerios. There's no way I have cholesterol problems because eventually I'm going to eat that entire box. I've done it many times in the past, but they're going to be stale by the time I open them, damn it, because I just keep going, I'm saving that for tomorrow. And I've been doing that for 3 weeks.
Cereal lasts for a long time.
Yeah.
I know, but
it lasts.
I'm also do it. One of those people, and this may come from being raised by grandparents. I don't know, but I treat expiration dates very loosely.
Oh, same here.
Same.
Yeah. Take a whiff of that milk first.
Oh, no. I don't mess with milk.
Oh,
yeah, no, I do. I don't really, I think I've been through, I'm not a big milk person anyway. So
if you're not milk person,
then I can't even smell it to decide. I have to make someone else do it because I even just smell good milk, I'm done.
Yeah.
See, I take a smell, and I've thrown some out before the date if it didn't smell right.
Sure.
Yeah, because sometimes
that smell.
Sometimes it gets warm, I guess. I don't know. But even I started buying half gallons of milk because the kids aren't there as much, and they don't drink as much milk.
I only use milk and cereal. That's it.
Yeah.
I love milk, but my body does not.
I'll make cookies. If I'm baking, then we use milk, and Shane will drink a glass. You will never catch me just drinking a glass of milk.
I usually have a purpose for it. I've got some cookies or a dessert or or cereal.
Yeah.
So I love, I'm a big cereal person.
Yeah. Well, that's why I got the box.
All right.
I can eat cereal for dinner.
What's your favorite cereal? Go.
Either Honey Nut Cheerios or Honeycomb.
Okay. Oh, Honeycomb. That's back in the day.
Honeycomb.
All right. Katie, favorite cereal? Go.
Raisin Bran Crunch.
Okay.
When I was a kid, young kid, my favorite cereal was Raisin Bran. That's I've been old from
with the sugar
birth.
On it. You sprinkle sugar?
No.
Now I've done I have done that, but you gotta, I like the crunch.
Yeah, okay. You gotta and I'm the opposite. I had to let it get soggy.
You like the soggy
and then eat the soggy Raisin Bran. Okay. But I also love the sugar smacks too. So I was still a kid. I wasn't always an old lady.
I wasn't big on sugar smacks.
I don't like soggy cereal. I use a very small amount of milk in my cereal. I'm particular about it.
Okay.
And then she eats her Honey Nut Cheerios one at a time.
No, I'm not. I also like frosted mini wheats.
Oh, yeah, me too.
So
those are good.
Yeah. And you have to eat those kind of quick, too, because they get soggy quick.
Yeah. People in my family eat those as a snack with no milk. Stick it in a little cup. Just eat them.
Isn't there an episode of Seinfeld where he stops going out with a girl because she ate her peas one at a time off her plate? Is that Seinfeld?
It sounds like a Seinfeld episode, but I'm not sure. We'd have to ask either my husband or Stacey Smith. Or Danny Chestnut. They all love Seinfeld.
And none of them listen to the show, so we haven't had a shout down in a while. So let's shout down those three. Danny, Kevin, Stacey, kiss our asses. You don't listen to the show.
I mean, Stacey was even
shout
on
down
the
administered.
Show.
Good job.
Kevin actually listens a little more.
Oh,
now,
yeah, that's right. Yeah. He does. So I will half retract that shout down. Yeah, so only two and a half shout downs today, not three.
Yeah, correct. There you go.
All right.
So, where we left off last week.
That's right.
Let me see if I can remember correctly.
All right, go for it.
We had called in Jesse Miskelly. Mm-hmm. We had questioned him for 11 hours. We only recorded 30 something minutes of that.
34 minutes.
34 minutes of that. Just, you know, we were starting to generate a lot of anger and frustration that I think we're just going to continue to build on. Mm-hmm. What about we didn't get Damien and
Jason
have not been called in at this point, right? In our story.
They're about to be. Yeah.
Okay.
When we left you last week.
Okay.
We were headed for trial.
Yes. And we finally got the autopsy results.
Yeah.
But you have not given us one single piece of physical evidence.
There wasn't one.
Spoiler.
Yeah. Well,
but you're
that is a matter of some conjecture.
But I've seen, and stop me and tell me to shut up.
Shut up. No, okay. I'm just kidding. Go
ahead. Okay. I thought they had found a hair or some hair.
Yeah, that's part three.
You're going to get to that later.
Today's part two. That's part three.
Okay. Then table that.
Okay.
But you're telling the story in real time. So this is what happened. We have been given the names of these guys who have been in trouble before, not very likable. Yeah. Well, Jason Baldwin's likable. Damien Eccles is not.
Yeah.
And then Jesse Miskelly has a very low IQ.
That's right. We've got these three suspects who have, they're about to be arrested and charged with the murders of 3 8-year-old boys in West Memphis, Arkansas on May the 5th, 1993. Those little boys were Stevie Branch, Christopher Byers, and Michael Moore.
And let's not forget them.
Yeah.
Because they are forgotten in the story the time.
That's right. The prevailing police theory about why the three other young men had committed these murders consisted mainly of a satanic panic related theory that the three dead boys had been pagan sacrifices at some sort of cult ceremony in the woods of West Memphis, Arkansas. Now, before we get to part two of this story, Kelly Turner, she has an update on a case that we have done previously. Back in February of 2022, we did a two-part story under the bridge about the Delphi murders. And there's been a recent development in that case that deals with this occult theory. Mm-hmm. Kelly, take it away.
We have given you several updates on the whole courtroom circus that's going on. So to give you the bullet points, the judge is still the same judge.
Okay.
The lawyers of the defendant were asked to step down. They did. They took it to a higher authority, got reinstated.
Okay.
And then they asked for the judge to be removed, but the higher authority said, nope, all of you stay in and work together. So the theory that the lawyers have of the defendant in that case, Richard Allen, is that he is innocent. He has now retracted his confessions or
That's going to sound familiar very soon.
Yeah, there was some jailhouse recordings where he admitted to the crimes on the recorded phone to his wife on multiple occasions.
Yeah.
The lawyers have come out with this multiple page. I don't even know how many at the moment, multiple page, almost like a manifesto. The prosecution calls it a work of fantasy, where they are saying that the murder of the two little girls in Delphi was a cult killing, and they could prove it in court. The way certain sticks and branches and things were arranged were more like symbols
around the bodies.
Yes.
The two little girls.
And most people are saying this is a work of fantasy, but we shall see how this goes. But they are going with that as the explanation that not only is our client innocent, but we can tell you who did it. It was a cult. Mm. They are also trying to pin it on an individual who has a lower IQ, who they claim has ties to this cult, but was in a different city at the time. So we'll see how that pans out.
That doesn't necessarily matter.
Yeah. We'll see how all of that pans out. I really, truly hope that these defense lawyers just try to create doubt and not try to put this on someone who is not mentally nor physically capable of doing something like this. So,
in an attempt just to wipe it off the books.
Yeah. So I'm very interested to see how this plays out.
All right. So there's our Delphi murders update with the occult angle.
Still going on in 2024. Yeah.
And now it is time for the West Memphis 3 Part 2.
Correct.
So one of our three suspects in the Robin Hood Hills murders was 17-year-old Jesse Miss Kelly Jr., the simpleton who confessed to being at the murder scene while he was being interviewed by the police a month after the murders. Now, I don't use the term simpleton lightly. We're not making fun of anybody with a...
No, Jesse Miss Kelly has a learning disability and a low IQ.
Here's one example of Jesse Miss Kelly's thought process. When he finished telling the police the story that ended up being considered his confession and they placed him in a jail cell, Miss Kelly said later that he thought he was just being offered a place to lie down and rest until his father got there to pick him up and take him home.
Oh, no. That is so similar to the nephew on Making a Murderer. Yeah.
So he is under arrest at this point.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he doesn't even understand.
He does not understand. During the 34-minute taped confession, which Jesse's lawyers would later claim was the result of the previous 10 hours of unrecorded coaching by the interviewing detectives, Miss Kelly identified 18-year-old Damian Eccles, our all-black wearing weirdo.
Yes.
And 16-year-old Jason Baldwin as the other two people who were with him in the woods when the boys were killed. When he announced the arrests at a press conference the following morning, the lead detective for the West Memphis Police Department declared that he was so certain of the guilt of the three suspects that he had in custody that on a scale from 1 to 10, his confidence level was, quote, 11. He smiled when he said it. Mm. Now, armed with this confession by Miss Kelly and a search warrant signed by a judge that night based on the confession and nothing else, at 10:28 p.m., police burst into the single-wide trailer where Damian Eccles lived with his family and arrested him. They also arrested Jason Baldwin, who was in the trailer with Damian. They were always together. And Thursday, June the 4th, was the last day of school, and they were celebrating by watching horror movies all night. Mm. That was Thursday, June the 3rd, 1993. Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that them watching horror movies didn't help either.
Did not help. In case you're interested, when the police arrived at Lakeside Mobile Home Park to arrest the suspects and execute the search warrant, Damien and Jason were watching the B-list horror movie from 1992 titled Leprechaun.
Oh gosh, I've seen that movie.
Wow, Leprechaun. Katie has seen a movie on the list.
I've seen a movie.
I have not seen that movie, so I'll put that on
here's,
my list.
Here's the interesting reaction from both of us. I start laughing, and she's like, "Oh my gosh!"
Well, I was entirely too young to watch that movie when I did. You said it came out in 92. I probably watched it in like 02, but I was. Elementary school.
Well, then Katie already knows what I'm about to tell you next. One of the stars of the movie was an as yet unknown 23-year-old actress named Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah.
Now, I don't recommend the film. No, I don't think Jennifer Aniston really, would either.
No, it's not very it's good. Terrible. It does have kind of a, I'm going to say that word again, a cult following because it's so bad. It's
aren't there multiple leprechauns?
Yeah, they did it again. The first one that we're referring to on the Rotten Tomatoes score, it is 4.8 out of 10.
I love
it. It's that bad.
That's fantastic.
I loved a scary movie though. Always like
most teenagers do. Mm-hmm. Most teenagers love a good horror movie. Some of the most fun I had in high school was when we saw the original Scream in the theater, and it was sold out and packed out. And
oh, that had to be awesome!
It was awesome.
Yeah,
it was awesome. Mm-hmm. Every teenager, or most of them, loves a good horror film. So that's not shocking to
me.
Not
at all.
Yeah, and I don't think that means anything.
It means nothing.
It doesn't mean anything, but that doesn't mean that somebody can't try to make it mean something.
Oh, well, it's just stacking against them. That's right. Everything that they're just going to use everything.
So now our three suspects are behind bars, and they're all going to stay behind bars for the next 8 months because nobody can afford to get them out.
Yeah.
Whatever their bond was.
If they even had
a bond set, who knows?
They don't have property to put up for a property bond.
They're all very poor.
The trials are not going to take place until February of 1994. That's eight months after the... Yeah. Arrest. Jesse's going to go to trial first because he's confessed. Even though he has retracted the confession, they are going to use that against him to prosecute him first. Arkansas is going to try Jesse first. He's recanted the confession. It doesn't matter. His defense is going to be false confession.
You always try who you
think you can get
the easiest one.
Yeah. So you think you can get the guilt, Do you think that his lawyer was really trying to help him, or was he just a court-appointed lawyer who was mad he got this case?
Both. At first, he was mad he got appointed this case. The defense attorney in Jason Miskelly's case was 27 years old. He'd just gotten out of law school.
Oh, my gosh.
He had never tried a capital murder case before, of course. And he initially believed that Jesse was guilty, but he came to believe that he was innocent. And by the time the trial rolled around 8 months later, the defense... tactic is going to be false confession.
Did he not have co-counsel?
He did.
Okay, I was about to say, I think you have to.
There were two that were appointed.
Okay, yeah.
For all three.
Was
each
the other
of the
one
three.
Just as young? The other appointed lawyer?
Yeah.
Dang.
Yeah. Wow.
I think he was the seventh person that the judge had called to ask him to take the case, and he was the one that was too dumb to know to say no, he said later.
Oh, gosh.
Well, at some point, the judge is going to make you, you know, like you
I
don't.
Think that's, I think when he placed the eighth call, he was like, this fucker's doing it, whether he wants to or not.
It's you.
Yeah.
And so get ready.
Yeah. The state of Arkansas requires your services. Mm-hmm. Get on it.
Guess what you're going to do.
Yeah. Judith Ann Neely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yep. the all days that we just talked about.
That's right.
Those eight lawyers, none of them wanted to do it.
Yeah. So we've talked about false confessions before here at True Crime on Easy Street. Perhaps most memorably when we did the Beatrice Six two-part series from January of 2022.
Mm-hmm. I mean, before we were done with the Beatrice Six, there was about 40 people in guilty. Yeah, I mean,
exactly.
They just kept bringing in more people.
One of the most glaring inconsistencies in Jesse's confession was the time frame in his story.
Okay.
Initially, Jesse had told the cops that the murders took place at 9 o'clock in the morning. And the cops knew that was wrong because the boys had been seen at 6:30 that night walking into the woods.
Correct.
And the boys had been in school all day. Even the 34-minute taped confession that Jesse, where his voice is recorded, you can hear the police goading him to change the time frame of his story to match the facts that they already had in front of them. And just briefly, I looked up a little bit about false confessions, and it turns out there are three main types of false confessions. The first is called a voluntary false confession. Remember the guy who confessed to the JonBenet Ramsey murder, who obviously did not do it. We talked about that with Jeannie Hatmaker. That was season 3, episode 24.
Yes. Yeah, you just want to be involved.
That's right. That is a voluntary false confession.
That man had a lot of other issues too.
A persuaded false confession. That's the Beatrice Six.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And then you have a compliant false confession. That was Jesse Ms. Kelly Jr. He's trying to escape a stressful situation. He's tired. He wants to go home. He doesn't understand what's going on. He's intellectually challenged. There have been 10 hours of untaped interrogation before this 34-minute statement was recorded.
And he has no one there on his side.
He is scared and he's panicked and he wants to go home. If they'll stop yelling at me, I will tell them anything they want me to say.
Oh. And there they have, they have regular intelligence, the people questioning him. You know, some people might debate that, but they do. And so they're able to mislead him, lie to him, you know.
For 10 hours.
Yeah.
And then record it for 34 minutes at the end.
Ugh.
There was a lot of uncertainty about how well this false confession strategy was going to work for the defense, because a transcript of the entire 34-minute interview had made its way onto the front page of the Memphis Commercial Appeal within days of the confession being taped, even though the judge had sealed all of the court records.
What?
When the Memphis Commercial Appeal ran this story on the front page, they copyrighted the entire front page of the paper so that no other media outlet in the area could quote their story. They had an exclusive and they copyrighted the story so nobody else.
They didn't have to.
You never do that.
They didn't have to retract any of that because he had sealed the documents.
The media doesn't have to reveal its sources.
Oh my God.
The morning headline, two headlines in the paper that day. One, teen describes cult torture of boys.
Oh my gosh.
The other one, Ms. Kelly tells police of sex mutilation.
Oh my gosh.
Those are the headlines. So everybody for 100 miles in every direction.
Bought this newspaper.
Believe this story. And believed this.
Sure. And I don't blame them if this is what they're getting in their newspaper.
I mean, if the Post Herald ran this, I mean, that this town.
We wouldn't.
Well, I know you wouldn't. But if you did.
But the citizens of this town would believe it's in the paper.
Sure. Yeah. So I don't necessarily.
This is the paper of the town, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, it's the paper in Memphis. It's the biggest paper in the metropolitan area.
That's what I'm
and
asking.
All of this is helping people to process it better because this is a cult.
That's right.
These are deranged cult.
Well, and nothing else, almost nothing else gets out. But somebody, one of the newspapers who did not run this story, said that a lady called him a few days after and wanted $500 for a copy of the full transcript of the 34-minute interview. She was selling it.
Oh, okay. Did
in the paper? No.
Didn't. You good don't. For them.
Yeah.
Good for them.
But a lot of people in the West Memphis area heard all they needed to hear. One of them said he did it and he blamed the other two. That's it.
And you've
that's
got
the end
this,
of that.
These snapshot headlines. I mean, just let's say you don't even read the article, but you look at the headline and then you're done. Especially in today's world with Twitter. Give me 6 words or less and I'm convinced of something.
Yep.
Well, that's where clickbait comes from. I mean, you know, you've got to have the best.
This was
headline.
Clickbait before the internet.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's what this was. Mm-hmm. Speaking of tipping the scales of justice.
That's the only kind of scales I won't talk about.
Yeah, well, prosecutors were going to use that confession against Ms. Kelly, like I said, despite the fact that he soon refuted it when he understood the enormity of what he had done. Mm-hmm. And they're going to try to convict him on 3 counts of capital murder and then offer him a plea deal to confess against Damien and Jason in their trial, which is going to be held. That's going to be a 2-person trial. Mm-hmm. They're going to try them together.
And because they want them more than Jesse Ms. Kelly.
That's right.
And he's probably going to jump at this.
Yeah. You would think.
But
the prosecution needed this confession because they had very little else.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
On which to convict Eccles.
What actually can Jesse Ms. Kelly process to make a rational decision, you know?
Oh, and by the way, none of their blood samples, hair samples, urine samples from any of the 3 suspects connected them to the murders in any way. Remember, it was a blank crime scene. Mm-hmm. No physical evidence, no murder weapon, no motive, unless you can sell to a jury this alleged tie-in to Satanism.
This is garbage investigation at its finest.
The police have no evidence, so they have to conjure some.
Garbage.
And that's what they did. So if the prosecutors are going to try and sell this obscure scenario for this murder to a jury, their best bet is to try and make Damien Echols look like the ringleader of a murderous, devil-worshipping trio of weirdos.
Yeah.
And if I were a prosecutor, that's what I would go for, too, because he looks the part.
Mm-hmm.
He admits to being a Wiccan.
Bingo, you're getting warm.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, that... I get that. That was actually smart thinking on their part.
With 8 months to go between the arrests and the February 1994 trial dates, and with all preliminary court records locked away, despite the occasional mysterious leak, the local media had little else to do on its front pages except to speculate about what had really happened at Robin Hood Hills and stir up the community's already bubbling fears about Satanism and the occult. And so that's what they did.
And they want these guys roasted.
Perhaps because that line of reporting was what existed at the time, which placed the devil so prominently in the news. Before long, area pastors and ministers were being quoted as experts in the case in the local papers.
No, are you kidding me?
No, I am not. No. One Memphis psychiatrist was quoted in the paper that pentagrams, books on the occult, black clothing, and heavy metal music were all signs that teenagers in and around West Memphis were, quote, delving into Satanism.
Well, don't look at me and Kelly and our all
not
black.
Today.
I mean... Every day.
You guys are both in the slammer. Yeah, every day.
I'm not making a case for myself at all. Uh-uh. Laughing at the leprechaun. I admitted last week I listened to AC/DC.
And you love Halloween.
I love Halloween. I'm
You are checking
surprised.
All the boxes, Kelly Turner.
I'm glad I didn't live in Arkansas at this time.
You'd have been the ringleader. You know,
apparently. I don't have black fingernails, and I don't talk about sacrificing babies. So that puts me a little bit different than Damien Echols.
Remember that the night sky itself got part of the blame. Remember we told you that it was a full moon.
Oh, the full moon.
Yeah.
Come on now.
And if you're going to sell a story about the occult.
Well, that's when you go out in the woods and do your Wiccan occult.
Yes.
Why not throw in the full moon as a piece of evidence just for good measure? And so that's what they did.
Throw it in.
I cannot.
Throw it in. That made it into a court document. Are you kidding me? That was part of the court.
That is facts.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh, this is terrible.
Among the very first words that came out of the mouth of the lead prosecutor on the day that Jesse Ms. Kelly went to trial was, quote, "We are not going to try and convince you that every word he said during that confession is the truth," unquote. So what he has admitted to at the very beginning is, right then, we're going to pick and choose what we want you to believe about what Jesse Ms. Kelly said, and we want you to ignore everything else.
Yep, that's exactly right.
Even though he has since recanted the entire thing.
What he just said was, we're going to feed you heaping spoonfuls of bullshit, and we expect you to gulp it down.
That is correct.
That's what he said.
And that's exactly what happened.
And that isn't, if you're on a jury, that should insult your intelligence right there, and that should have pissed you off. But it didn't. I know.
No, it probably fired him up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But that's one thing that a lot of people who think that they did not do it the West Memphis 3 will point to. You're running out of things to point at.
Mm-hmm.
But that's one of them. Watch this case unfold for yourself. Get the Max app and watch Paradise Lost from 1996. There's a trilogy of those films, but you got to start at the beginning or it won't make any sense.
Yeah. And isn't there also a documentary called West Memphis 3?
I'm sure there is.
Okay.
Yeah. I have not seen that one. I did see that movie with Reese Witherspoon.
Okay. Maybe
and I read Mara Leverett's book.
Okay. Maybe that's what I was thinking. But maybe the West Memphis 3 is not a documentary, but I think it probably is.
I read another book about by someone who thinks that they did it. And I wanted to get both sides of the story.
And what did you think of that book? How did that?
It was well researched. It was well written. Okay. But I think if you get enough information about this case, you're going to come down hard on one side or the other.
And did they have evidence, though? Physical evidence?
No, but for them, it was enough.
For them, it was enough. And you know what?
For the jury, it was enough.
I've got to say, you know, I've said on this podcast before, just because you don't have DNA evidence doesn't mean you don't have good evidence.
That's right.
But I've yet to hear good evidence in this case.
I can't help you there.
Okay.
There is documentaries. There was a a mini series on ID, and then I think there's one on.
I watched the thing from ID. It's 3 hours long.
And
yeah, that's Netflix.
Good. West of Memphis.
Yes,
West
I watched that as well. Yeah, okay. That's the one that came out. That's another documentary that I'll mention in part three, but that one got a lot of famous Hollywood people involved.
Yes.
Peter Jackson of the Lord of the Rings trilogy produced that documentary that tells this entire story in one 2.5 hour movie.
Okay.
That you should watch.
All right.
As Jesse's defense attorney explained later, it did not take him long to realize in conversations with his client that Jesse Ms. Kelly Jr. had no concept of the difference between a trial judge, a police detective, and a defense attorney.
Oh my gosh.
He could not understand that we were on his team, the lead attorney said later. That's when I began to look at this case in a different light. Remember, we told you Stidham was his name. He initially thought that Jesse was guilty. Why would you confess if you didn't do it? But he came to realize during these 8 months getting ready for this case, of course he didn't.
That he didn't have the mental capacity.
He had no idea what he was saying.
So this defense lawyer and his team really believed that Jesse Ms. Kelly was innocent.
At one point during trial preparations, the defense attorney said later, Jesse had asked him about a word he was not familiar with. He said, hey, what does satin mean? And he was pointing to a word. The word was Satan. But Jesse said it like the fabric. The attorney realized then that his client had heard of the devil, but he had never heard of the devil referred to as Satan.
And if you're going to worship the devil, you've heard that word.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
When Jesse's trial began, he spent most of his time in courtroom, in the courtroom, leaned over in his chair with his head, with his forehead on the table, staring at the floor.
Oh.
Chewing gum, not looking around, not looking at anyone. One reporter described him as, quote, a strange-looking little character, small and frail, giving the impression of a tranquilized squirrel.
Good gracious.
Defense motions to suppress the confession because it had been coerced, rejected by the judge. Mm. Motion to throw out the confession because Jesse was mentally challenged, rejected by the judge.
Why was that rejected by the judge? Did
because
the judge
the judge
say,
has the discretion to...
But they don't have to
he doesn't
say
have to
that.
Tell you why.
They can just say rejected.
He is the state of Arkansas's representative in that courtroom. Okay. He is the referee. He gets to decide what's fair and what's
but
not
doesn't
fair.
Doesn't have to explain. Nope. There's, you know, normally a referee would have to reference a rule or a... You know, if the Supreme Court rules on something, they have all their different points to make.
Which he probably has a point.
I'm sure in his mind he did, but he didn't have to tell
he
everybody.
He didn't have to tell everybody.
That's right.
So we don't know.
Okay. Another motion to have Jesse tried as a minor because, remember, he's 17 years old, rejected by the court.
Mm-hmm.
When Jesse's defense attorney tried to question an expert about coerced confessions, he wanted to know these specifics from Jesse's transcript about this long interrogation session before and what might be factual and what might not be. The judge sustained the objection against allowing him to testify. Another loss for the defense team.
Mm.
Severely limited that person's testimony. You can see a brief piece of testimony from him in Paradise Lost. And it also turned out that Jesse Ms. Kelly had not failed the polygraph test. That was a lie.
Which the police
which
are
the
allowed
police can
to
do.
Lie to you. Please get that in your head. And people are probably like,
if you ever find yourself arrested for anything,
lawyer,
one word, lawyer,
the police
and then
are
stop
allowed
talking.
To lie mm-hmm. to you.
Yeah. Don't say anything else, but say lawyer, say lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And look, we are friends of our police officers
oh, sure.
here. We've
love
had
them.
Some
great,
on the show.
Great law enforcement here.
We've had, the only episode I ever missed, we had a, what we had,
is that Bo Jolly?
No, Mike.
Mike O'Dell
was
that's
on
right.
here.
Yeah.
I mean, we are friends.
He was the one of the prosecutors in the Judith Ann Neely case. He
yes.
became the district attorney yeah. in this area after that.
Right. So, but and we're still sitting here telling you to say lawyer.
Oh,
yes.
Since you mentioned Mike O'Dell, shout out to him.
Oh,
he texted me 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
With an update about there was a murder here in Cherokee County a few years back.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody was shot while getting money out of an ATM. That person was caught, convicted, sentenced to death. There was an update in his, the date had been set for his execution. Mike sent me this text while he was on vacation in Italy with his family.
Aww. Oh, wow.
So.
He is devoted.
Yes.
Very devoted
very
to
much.
His job. And we, you know, the folks around here that we're friends with, we don't believe they would do anything like this.
No.
Like this total miscarriage
I would vouch
of justice.
For anybody I know in local
absolutely.
Law enforcement.
But we're still telling you. Say lawyer.
Yes. The judge would not allow the revelation about the...
The what?
About about the polygraph test
passed. Why would he
because
not?
Because you can't use it against him. So you can't use it for you either.
You can't use it for you. You can't use it against him. Okay,
That's what the judge said. And that's right. I mean, that's
right. You're right.
It is inadmissible.
But the prosecutors were still able, or the detectives were still able to use that lie detector test.
Sure.
To coerce a confession.
Yeah, because we're not in a courtroom.
But the defense attorney couldn't even tell the jury that.
Right.
Because, sorry, no polygraph.
Inadmissible.
As evidence, right.
They're not kidding when they say inadmissible.
Yeah. And ultimately, I mean, obviously the prosecutors did a pretty good job of maneuvering the jury members through this portion of this confession that they wanted them to pay attention to. Mm-hmm. And I told you already about the defense attorney. He was 27 years old. He'd never done this mm-hmm. before. Did I mention that Jesse had an alibi? He had a half a dozen witnesses who said that he was 20 miles away in Dice, Arkansas, wrestling, like professional wrestling.
They went to
They were training to become wrestlers.
But he was with them.
He was with other people who were there with him.
And were they called to the stand?
Yes.
And they said, I saw him.
Yes.
Then what's their counter to that?
Here's what happened. Jesse Miskelly's father, Sr., he would speak to reporters would come to his house every day. They would buy him a case of beer and sit around and wait until he got drunk and listen to him blather on about the case. And then they would print it in the paper.
Gosh,
my eyes hurt.
And the defense attorney would go to Jesse Miskelly Sr. every week and say, please stop doing that. You're only hurting your son's case. He would do it anyway. Mm-hmm. And so he had, on multiple occasions, he had told the story about Jesse's alibi and had named the people who were going to be able to go up on the stand and testify that he was somewhere else. And that gave the police plenty of opportunities to interview those six people and put the fear of God in them. So their statements about Jesse's alibi were much less convincing by the time they got onto the stand.
Harassing witnesses?
Yes.
Is that what that is?
That's what I would call it.
I would call it that. Yeah, I would call it. There's probably even worse things to call it than that.
I'm thinking massive spastic fuck up.
There is no way that this Jesse Miskelly Sr. has a high IQ. There's no way.
No.
Would do that to your own kid. But does he realize,
in his mind, he's trying to help.
He's helping. In his mind, they're exploiting these poor, unintelligent individuals.
Yeah. Now, as it turned out, the 12 members of the jury in the triple murder case of Jesse Miskelly Jr. had no problem at all believing that the simple-minded 17-year-old had said much more than enough to get himself convicted on 3 counts of murder. Forget that he later claimed that that confession was coerced.
I don't like it.
You admitted it, you can't take it back, you're guilty. That's the argument.
Was it everybody? The whole jury was like, yep. Or were there any people that were saying,
I don't think so.
I can't buy this.
I don't know what the count was.
It's got to be unanimous.
7 women, 5 men on Jesse Miskelly's jury. It's got to be, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. There are so many times in our justice system when I just am like, there's nothing stupider than an American jury. Mm. But, you know.
Yeah. Well, an American jury.
A vengeful American jury.
An American jury has the average education of a 7th grader.
Good Lord.
That's a fact.
On top of all of this.
Oh my gosh. If you get called to jury duty and you're smart, please don't get out of it. Just go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What somebody said once, it was a conversation about jury duty. And basically, your jury is going to be the people who weren't smart enough to get out of jury duty.
Oh my gosh.
And
I don't have a better way though.
Yeah.
I don't have a better alternative.
No, it's the best justice system in the world for all of its flaws. I'll take it over anything.
Yeah, it is flawed. Yeah. But yeah.
On top of all of this, in the opinion of a lot of people who believe in the innocence of the West Memphis Three, the judge did the defense no favors. Some of the rejected motions I've already mentioned.
Yeah.
Including the judge's refusal to allow the defense to question the interrogating detectives under oath about what they said to Jesse Miskelly in the hours before his tape confession was made.
Why?
Because the judge didn't want it to be about the investigation. He wanted it to be, he didn't want to put the police department on trial, which was, of course, was one of the defense
But they were on trial.
Strategies.
They were being investigated by the state police currently.
Not in Judge Burnett's courtroom, they're not.
Well, then what part did he play with them?
What?
Was he involved in all their criminal activity that they were doing?
That's a great question.
Interesting.
I mean, I don't know if he was or not, but why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you put your... If you're so confident in this detective and all of his fantastic work that he's done for this case, put him on the stand and let's hear from him.
The defense wanted to know how they arrived at this satanic panic angle of investigation and about how hard they had pushed Miss Kelly during the interrogation.
And they do they not have the right to do that?
I would think.
Not in Judge Burnett's courtroom, you did not. He would let them testify, but he would not demand that they be placed under oath to testify.
What?
And not testify. I didn't mean testify. He would let them be interviewed by the detectives, but he would not demand that they be placed under oath to be interviewed.
This is a circus.
Yeah.
This is a circus.
On February the 5th, 1994, after 2 hours of deliberation,
2 hours. That's not good for the defense.
The jury of 7 women and 5 men found Jesse guilty of first-degree murder in the death of Michael Moore, first degree, and second-degree murder in the deaths of Stevie Branch and Christopher Byers. He got a life sentence for the capital murder charge and 20 years each for the second-degree murder charges. Not capital murder, first-degree murder.
I have a question. Why that child?
Because one of the stories that Jesse Miss Kelly Jr. told on the tape was that at one point, Michael Moore tried to escape, and Jesse caught him and held him until Damien came over and got him and took him back to where the other boys were.
Because he was one of the ones that was tossed in to drown. The mutilation and everything the Byers child
By
had.
Jesse's own confession, Michael Moore had tried to run away, and Jesse grabbed him and held him so that he couldn't escape. Jesse. And in the closing argument, she'll hear the prosecutor say, if it hadn't been for Jesse Miss Kelly, Michael Moore would still be alive today because he stopped him from running away. Oh. And the jury said, yep, first degree murder.
I'm not being fair to juries. Yeah. I'm really not.
I know, we've kind of pounded on it a little bit today.
I'm sorry about that.
We mean this one specifically.
I mean this, well, I also mean well, some I'm, others. Yeah. I'm looking at you, OJ. And
good God.
And some others I can continue. Yeah.
Well, we all know where OJ is now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
But they're thinking about this 8-year-old, these 3 8-year-old terrified children. And I can totally understand that they want justice. And you've had someone who has somehow brought himself to saying he did these things.
Yeah.
And that is so foreign to a lot of people. Why in the world, especially during this time?
Even the defense attorney initially thought, well, my client must be guilty because why else would you say you did it if you didn't do it?
So I give this jury some grace for that. I understand that. And that's what they're thinking about. But it just makes you more angry at the investigators, the judge.
Frustration level 7.
I'm there.
On our way to 100 million.
I'm there.
Total sentence for Jesse Miss Kelly Jr., 140 years in Arkansas State Prison. Jesse Miss Kelly Jr. is no longer in prison today. He's a free man, but you'll have to come back for part 3 and find out about that when we get there.
Yep.
And you'll have to stick around to hear these words from our sponsors to hear about the combined triple murder trial of our other two defendants, Damien Eccles and Jason Baldwin, right after this. Today's episode is brought to you in part by A&W Outdoor Services, located right here in Cherokee County, Alabama. It's almost time to tidy up the deck, clean the gutters, and spruce up the yard and landscaping around your home, lake house, or creekside cabin. And who better to do that for you than the professional crew at A&W Outdoor Services? Call 256-706-7964 and let Alan and his crew do all the hard work for you, so you can spend your time this summer enjoying your piece of Cherokee County in clean, carefree comfort. Call Alan today for a free estimate or to get on the A&W spring schedule before it's full. That's A&W Outdoor Services at 256-706-7964.
Hey guys, do you know what time it is?
Tell us!
It's time to plan your best vacation ever, right here in beautiful Cherokee County, Alabama.
Many outdoor adventures await. You can wet a hook in beautiful Weiss Lake, swing away at Cherokee Pines Golf Club, climb to the best view around at Cherokee Rock Village, hike the Little River Canyon National Preserve, take a day's long splash at Pirates Bay Water Park, and there's so much more.
The Cherokee County Chamber of Commerce and Tourism has a full list of recommended lodging facilities, RV sites, and campgrounds, and they're all set up to suit your vacation needs, whatever they may be.
So come see us from wherever you are located. And if you already live right here in Cherokee County, then plan your summer staycation with the Chamber by visiting cherokee-chamber.org. Thank you to all of our sponsors. All right, Scott, let's continue down this road.
So the prosecution, we've already got Jesse Miss Kelly sentenced to 140 years in prison. The prosecutors in the case of the West Memphis Three had assumed from the beginning that based on his previous mental issues and the outlandishness of their accusation against him, they figured Damian Echols is going to go for the insanity defense.
Oh.
He's going to plead not guilty by reason of insanity.
Does he?
But when the judge asked for the pleas from Damian Echols and Jason Baldwin on February the 18th, 1994, on the first day of their trial, they both adamantly declared their innocence.
So they have a joint trial.
Yes, and that would be the basis for their defense strategy for both of their court-appointed legal teams. We didn't do it. We're innocent.
We never said we did.
Damian Echols' strategy is I'm innocent. Jason Baldwin's strategy is I'm innocent, and I'm not Damian Echols.
Oh, well.
That's good. His strategy.
Good one. That's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
His lawyer told him that,
yes,
right?
Yes, that is exactly right. Yeah. Jason's defense team decided to try and blend into the woodwork as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like that meme where Homer Simpson's going into the bushes.
Right into the bushes.
Yeah.
The prosecution was zeroed in on Damian Echols first and foremost. So the theory is let's not bring any unwanted attention to our client. We're not going to say anything too loudly. We're not going to accuse anybody else. We're not going to try and inflame this jury one iota. And maybe we can sneak out of here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That was Jason Baldwin's defense team's strategy.
I understand it. It makes sense.
In fact, Jason Baldwin's defense team had tried to separate the trial, his trial from Damian's. Judge wouldn't allow it.
I don't understand why they were tried together.
Because it's to save money, for one thing.
Well,
that's what the judge is going to say.
Definitely. Yeah.
We're trying to maximize our resources here.
Yeah.
And plus, they're both going to be, the prosecution's argument is the same for both.
So
they're implicated in Jesse Miss Kelly's confession.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. I don't like it, but I understand it.
But Jason's team didn't want to be swamped by these allegations of cults and Satanism and weirdness and secret meetings and just the general weirdness of Damian Echols.
Yeah.
But the judge said no.
Okay. All right.
Fair
enough.
Sure. On the prosecution side, they didn't have any more evidence against Echols and Baldwin than they had against Miss Kelly Jr., but the confession had been plenty then.
So they're just still riding that confession in quotes.
And they've already got one guilty verdict, so.
But now they don't have the confession because Jesse is going to decide at the last minute, after a lot of wrangling, a lot of back and forth, a lot of negotiations with the prosecution team, he says, I am tired of lying. I'm not going to implicate my friends in something they didn't do. I refuse to testify.
Okay.
So now they don't even have him. Mm-hmm. So can you even mention him in court if you don't have him? So he's not in court.
Don't forget that everybody knows about it because they read it in the paper.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. We didn't try to get a change of
There was venue. A change of venue, yes.
There was.
There
we
was.
Did get
I
one.
Forgot to mention that. Yeah, both the Miss Kelly's tried 60 miles away.
Okay, so we still got
Baldwin and Echols are tried 100 miles away, but it didn't matter.
This was big news, yeah.
We're going to tell you quite a few events, accusations, implications that came up during the Echols-Baldwin trial. But first, I'm going to tell you about a few things that we're not going to go anywhere near.
Okay.
In this 101 version of True Crime.
All right.
Item number one that we will brush conveniently past.
Okay.
Is the mysterious adult black male who stumbled into a Bojangles restaurant just down the street from Robin Hood Hills on the night that the three little boys went missing. He was babbling incoherently. He was covered in blood. The police never filed a report on the incident. The next day, one police officer did go back and try to scrape some blood off the wall to be sent off to the state crime lab, but he lost it.
Oh.
He lost the evidence.
How'd he lose it?
Who knows? Maybe he lost it.
Okay.
File 13.
All right. I don't like it, Scott.
I don't.
Brush. Item number two. Okay. I would love to tell you more, but we're not talking about that one. Mm-hmm. Item number two.
Okay.
That we're not going to talk about.
Okay.
Is the female neighbor of Jesse Miskelly's who, with the full knowledge of the West Memphis Police Department, inserted herself into the investigation as what she later called a volunteer detective.
In order
to try and uncover compromising information about Jesse's friends, Damien Echols and Jason Baldwin. Years later, she would admit that her trial testimony about once attending a secret cult meeting with Jesse and Damien had been a bald-faced lie.
We're not talking
about that.
All right.
Go ahead.
Did anything ever happen to her for just lying? Isn't that perjury?
Yeah.
I doubt it.
Wow.
Not that I know of.
Wow.
Item number three.
Way to go, lady.
On our
Way
list of rabbit holes
okay.
to skip over.
Okay.
Is the 8-year-old boy who told police that he had been a witness to the murders and saw Damien and Jason catch the boy's blood in a bucket and then drink it. Prosecutors initially toyed with the idea of putting that kid on the stand.
What?
But they finally realized that even despite their outlandish allegations, that was too much to try and feed to the jury. So he did not end up testifying. Oh, item number four that we're not going to talk about. The testimony of a drug-addicted local burglar who claimed to have overheard Jason Baldwin confess to the crimes while they were incarcerated together at some point between the arrest and the trial. It would be years before that little shit would admit that he lied on the stand.
The old jailhouse snitch.
Yep.
Great. I love those.
We're not talking about any of those four things. But here are a few items that took place that we are going to talk about in the Echols-Baldwin murder trial.
All right.
At one point, the Echols defense team, already under the most pressure for reasons that we've laid out to you, he's the one they're after.
Sure.
They tried to insinuate in court that the murders were committed by none other than John Mark Byers, the stepfather of Christopher Byers.
Oh, no.
The hulking 6'5". 250-pound man who can't keep his mouth shut in the first Paradise Lost film.
That's not a good angle.
Why, though? Because he's so big?
Because he's large?
That, and because there was a knife. I wasn't going to mention this, but there was a knife that John Mark Byers gave to the members of the HBO film crew.
Okay.
As a gift around Christmas time in 1993. And when they looked at it, they noticed there was a little bit of blood on it. So they turned it over to the authorities, and the authorities sent it to the crime lab, and it came back. It tested positive for blood. And now you have to remember this is 1994, early 1994. So DNA testing was much less sophisticated then than now. They could only determine that the blood matched Christopher Byers and John Mark Byers, even though they're not biologically related.
That makes no damn
sense at all.
Blood type.
It was all we know is there's blood on the knife.
Yeah.
And we don't know whose it is.
So
that makes no sense.
So the defense gets John Mark Byers on the stand during Damien's trial.
Okay.
And asks him about the knife. They're just trying to point an accusatory finger away from their
client.
They're
creating reasonable doubt.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what they're trying to do.
Yeah. Reasonable doubt is what I would try to tell the folks over in Delphi.
You would have to. Yeah.
Reasonable doubt.
At one point, the prosecution brought out a man who said he had a PhD and was an expert on the occult.
A PhD? It turned
out that his degree was from an unaccredited university. He had ordered it in the mail. He had never attended class or read a book, but he had a piece of paper hanging on the wall that said he was a doctor
of the occult.
No one told me you can just order a degree on the internet.
That's like, isn't that Dr. Raymond Stantz from the Ghostbusters?
Yep.
Isn't that what his...
Pretty much. And when Jason Baldwin's defense attorney got that information, the guy admitted on the stand that he didn't have...
Yeah. It's really a piece of paper I got in the mail.
He said, Judge, we don't need to hear from this witness. He's not an expert. The judge said, I don't think you have to have a degree to be an expert on anything. He's an expert as far as I'm concerned. Let's hear what he has to say.
Is true. You don't have to have a degree to be an expert, but...
But we had an expert in Jesse's trial that was going to testify that his confession had been coerced, and the judge didn't want to hear that.
Mm-mm.
But he's going to let this guy testify.
This is a different judge, though.
No,
right?
Same judge.
Oh,
same judge in both cases.
Good Lord. Okay, it's obvious what he wants to happen.
Yeah.
at this point in time, come on, y'all. It's obvious what this judge is wanting.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to maintain my journalistic obvious? Integrity by walking down the middle of the road on
good
this.
Good for you. I'm not. I don't think I'm
doing a very good job.
I don't even claim to be a journalist or anything, really. I don't claim to be anything.
You're in the bag for the defense team on this one. That's pretty obvious.
Yeah. And you know what? That's a long time of my life, I was not.
Yeah, I know.
I thought they did it. Yeah. But this is insanity.
Mm-hmm. Another moment in the case that's going to make you rip the arms off your chair. It seemed that the prosecution showed a bit of desperation at one point, because suddenly in the middle of November, before the trial took place, the prosecution sent out a police dive team, scuba diving team, to a lake behind Jason Baldwin's house and came up with a 9-inch long hunting knife.
Okay.
Now, the Baldwin family, this was a story in the Baldwin family. A year before the murders, they had all been out on this pier fishing, and Jason's mother got mad. They were arguing over the knife or something. Mm-hmm. She got mad and threw the knife into the water. Everybody knew that story in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So the theory is that somebody in the neighborhood, when the cops came around asking, told this story about the knife that had been thrown in the water a year before. And suddenly in the middle of November, when they've got nothing else to do or nothing else to hang their prosecution on, the prosecutors say, let's go see if we can find that knife.
But how did they get I guess the judge gave them a warrant to go do it, right?
I don't know if they had to have one, but I'm sure this judge was glad to do that.
Oh, my gosh.
And so they brought the knife to the trial, introduced it as a piece of evidence.
Well, at least we've got, you know, something. So far, we haven't had a dadgum anything.
And they would say is, this could be the murder weapon.
This could be the murder weapon.
Because
did they object to that statement?
Of course they did.
Objection sustained. No. Overruled. Oh, my gosh.
And they were certain, almost certain, if the story's believable, if the way they got the information is to be believed, there's no way this is the murder weapon.
Okay.
And they were certain, they were almost certain that it was not, but that's what they did. That's what they did in trial. They planted that seed in the jury's head. Hey, if it wasn't this knife, it was one just like it, but wow, look, this looks exactly like the knife that matches some of these injuries in these autopsy photos. Huh, that's weird. And it's right behind Jason Baldwin's house. I don't necessarily believe that this knife got thrown there a year before. Do you, members of the jury? The prosecution was saying.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. All right. You know, point one for the prosecution there.
Yeah. One of the reasons for that bit of subterfuge, if you believe the people who believe in the innocence of the West Memphis Three, is that the prosecution needed something. Mm-hmm. To hold over Jason Baldwin's head, because what they really wanted to do, they wanted Baldwin
to roll on Echols
and testify against Damien.
Yeah.
And they needed something to push him in that direction. Mm-hmm. Speaking of lies that you tell about your friends, guess who has refused to lie on the witness stand? Jason Baldwin. Mm-hmm. He said, absolutely not. On two occasions, they approached him. First, he was going to get a 40-year sentence. And later, they came back to him with a 20-year sentence. You're out of jail in 10 years. Just lie about Damien Echols on the stand. Now, they didn't use the word lie. Mm-hmm. They said testify against.
Just testify. And he said, absolutely.
He said, absolutely not.
Absolutely not.
Baldwin flatly refused both offers. Mm-hmm. He said to his lawyer, I'm not going to lie about my friend. Because I don't believe that there's any way possible that a jury in the United States of America is going to find me guilty when I obviously did not do this.
Oh, wow.
No.
He said, I was not brought up to believe that anything like that could ever happen in America.
None of us are.
Yeah, that's true.
One more thing. Even though a doctor from the state crime lab testified during the second trial that his post-mortem examinations had determined that the three boys had not been sexually assaulted, the judge still allowed the prosecution to speculate that that happened when they summarized the case at the end. Even though everybody knew that it didn't happen, he still let the prosecution plant that seed in the jury's mind.
You know, the judge in Casey Anthony's case didn't even allow that. You know, they came out of the gate trying to point fingers at her father for sexually abusing her. And a judge finally said, you better bring forth some evidence or stop mentioning that.
That's right. So now our frustration level is at the boiling point, right?
I'm past it. Okay. I'm to this point where I'm like one of those rats you put in the chamber and you've shocked the floor so much they've just laid down.
Yeah.
That's where I'm at.
I know. Well, for those of you out there listening, if you want to make yourself even more frustrated, then go do some digging because you're going to find 100 things that I didn't mention and I'm not going to, but there's so many things.
I want to go back to the first thing that you said we're not talking about.
Yeah.
As much as I don't particularly like, let's, blame the black man in the South for this. What you described to me was something that probably should have been looked into.
Mm-hmm. Eliminated as a possibility.
That, exactly.
Yeah.
Why in the world, if you're going to go to all of these extremes to get this knife, all of this other stuff, why not look into that? Why not look, at least just check it out?
The same officer who responded to John Mark Byers' call about his missing son at 8 o'clock on May the 5th.
On May the 5th at 8 o'clock.
She is standing there taking a statement from them and she gets another call about this incident at Bojangles.
Good Lord.
So she leaves and goes down to Bojangles. Put your coffee mug down.
It's down.
Yeah.
She doesn't even get out of the fucking car. She drives around to the drive-thru and talks to the manager through the drive-thru window.
No. Uh-uh.
She doesn't even go in the bathroom and look at the blood marks and all the evidence that this...
Scott, shut your mouth.
I wish I was making that up.
It was right there.
Yep.
Is it because it was a black man?
What's even more frustrating is, at one point in one of these movies, I've seen so many now, I forget which one, but they call this female officer to the stand to try and explain why she didn't, and she responds to the defense's questions with such contempt.
Oh, yeah.
Something like, of course I didn't get out of the car. No, I did not.
Oh.
No, I did not.
Ooh, salty.
Yeah.
Rare.
Just, okay. Ugh. I just want to reach through the TV screen and punch her in the face.
Yeah. She's not fun. She's not likable at all.
No. I'll guarantee you she spends a lot of time at home alone because she has no friends, this woman. She is the cop in the department that when she walks in the door, everybody else pretends like they're doing something else so they don't have to speak to her. She just gave off that vibe.
Gross.
Damien and Jason both refused to talk to the police, thank goodness, after they were arrested.
Yep.
One of the reasons why they didn't trust the police was because they knew that for the month between the time of the murders and the time they were arrested, cops were visiting their mobile home parks where they lived and asking other people who live there about anything that might be incriminating, specifically that would point towards Damien and Jason as suspects. Because remember, it's 4 days after when the cops have zeroed in on these two. So they have spent the next month driving through the neighborhood, the mobile home parks, trying to find something. And Jason and Damien get word of this.
Mm-hmm.
So they know that the cops...
Okay. And look, let me just say this. They wouldn't even be on their radar had they not gotten that list.
That's right. From the juvenile probation officer.
From the juvenile probation officer.
Yeah.
Wouldn't have even known...
Yeah, maybe we could have spent some more time worrying about the guy with the blood on him walking around like a crazy.
It would be unsolved because you got Super Cop who didn't even get out of her car.
Yeah.
Didn't even get off of her ass and get up and go in and look at something. Mm-hmm. So it would be unsolved.
Yep. Now, remember that we know a lot about what happened in the courtroom.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that HBO documentary, Paradise Lost. They were allowed access. The judge, the defense teams, the prosecution, everybody agreed to allow these cameras to come in and film this documentary. So that's, if I'm giving you details, I did not read the transcript. I don't know everything that happened in the courtroom. Yeah. I know what the guys at HBO packaged and handed to me to watch.
But there's an open courtroom is a big thing. Like they really don't want to close courtrooms. Yeah. They want media to be able to have access because that First Amendment right, surpasses a lot of things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of the more compelling defense arguments that Eccles and Baldwin included in their case to try and create reasonable doubt. Mm-hmm. Maybe the mysterious bleeding black man from Bojangles. Maybe it was angry John Mark Byers. Mm-hmm. Oh, and by the way, the doctor from the state crime lab said during the trial that in his best estimate, or he gave his best estimate of the time of death, which made Jesse's confession seem even more inaccurate, more coerced. The West Memphis police interviewed dozens of other possible suspects, including later, it turned out, John Mark Byers, but the judge would not allow the defense to bring up any of that in defense of their clients during their trial. You can't say he might have done it, he might have done it, he might have done it. And I'm talking specifically about the fact that dozens of other people were interviewed, not the other two things. They were able to bring that up.
Mm-hmm.
But
I gotcha.
But the judge wouldn't let him say, you had a lot of other suspects, didn't you? Who were they? Mm-hmm. No. Inadmissible.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I don't know that I want to go down that rabbit hole and start naming other people's names in a trial. Well, but I mean, you know,
Jason Baldwin's defense did not want to do that. Mm-hmm. They didn't want to risk inflaming the jury. But Damien Echols' right. defense team had nothing else.
They were just Hail Marys.
Except, hey, we didn't fucking do it.
Yeah,
but nobody's listening to that.
Yeah,
so you got to do something.
And we can't say prove it because they really can't prove it, but they are somehow.
To that point, the trial was in its third week before the prosecution officially announced that it had a motive in the killings, and that it was cult related. They waited until 3 weeks into the trial to officially broach this topic.
Cult. Okay.
They hadn't mentioned anything about that in their opening statement. Among other things, they're trying to create more possibilities for a prosecution than the defense can possibly prepare for. Mm-hmm. They gave them over 11,000 pages of discovery. They just dumped everything at them. And the defense at one point came to the judge and said, Judge, they're giving us every single thing. We need to know what their prosecution strategy is going to be so we can sift through all of this paperwork and find out what we need to be prepared for. The judge said, no, they don't have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You're on your own.
It's easy to win the game when the ref's on your side.
Yep. After a heated sidebar conversation about this sudden cult-related
mm-hmm.
motive,
mm-hmm.
the judge sided with the prosecution.
I'm not shocked.
And their sudden new strategy, which had not been mentioned before, sure. including allowing the prosecution to present to the jury that Damien Echols owned 15 black t-shirts and a sizable collection of heavy metal music. Jason Baldwin had a similar taste in music and 11 black t-shirts. All of that information was presented to the jury.
Do you want to know how many black shirts I own?
How many shirts do you own?
Black shirts?
No, just shirts, because it's going to be the same number of both. Because all of your shirts are black.
Oh, I mean, same over here.
I
got a lot of black shirts.
Probably 7 black t-shirts. And then just black shirts in general, like dress shirts, mm-hmm. all of that. Yeah. That's going to be another 15.
The prosecution may as well have just walked up to the jury box and shouted, boo. Because they were trying to scare the jury.
Yeah.
In the almost total absence of any evidence linking these two to the crime, their job was to scare the jury into a guilty verdict.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what they did. So the combined trial of Damien Echols and Jason Baldwin that had begun on February the 19th, 1994, concluded with closing arguments on March the 17th, 1994. Kelly, how old were you on that day? That was your birthday.
March 17th and 94?
94.
Let's see. Do the math. I was born in 79. So
you were 15? 15.
15, yeah. Not much younger than these guys.
Mm-hmm. You were 1 year younger than Jason Baldwin and 3 years younger than Damien Echols.
Yeah.
Even though one reporter who sat through the entire trial reported afterward that the prosecution rested its, when the prosecution rested its case, here's the quote. All the state had proved was, number one, the murders had taken place.
Mm.
And number two, it explained how the victims had died. It had proved the deed and the how, but not the who, not the where, not the when, no motive or opportunity. Time of death disputed, and not a single shred of tangible evidence linked any of the defendants to the crime that was printed in the paper.
So all they have proven is that three boys were murdered.
And somebody did it.
And somebody did it.
And that guy has a shitload of black t-shirts. And so does that guy. Oh. Jason Baldwin's attorney immediately asked the jury for a asked the judge for a directed verdict, which would have acquitted him on the spot.
As you do.
But of course. But right in front of the jury, the judge declared that the prosecution's case, quote, seemed more than sufficient to me.
Who is this judge?
His last name is Burnett, B-U-R-N-E-T-T. He's a former judge, former state senator. Not sure if he's still alive. This was 31 years ago, and he was probably in his late 50s or early 60s then. It looked like, I don't know, he just looked like an old man. But I'm in my mid-50s, and I don't look old to me, so I don't know.
Okay.
I noticed Katie didn't say anything when I said that I don't look old to me.
Wow, Judge Burnett, huh? Oh,
Katie looked down at the ground when I said that. Perhaps at this point in our story, it is no surprise that it turned out that the prosecution's scare tactics had worked. Damien was weird.
He is weird.
Jason had a bunch of black shirts. Let's find them guilty and both go home. Or find them both guilty and then all go home. And so that's what they did.
Everybody said yes to both of them. The whole jury, all 12, said guilty, guilty. Washing my hands of this and going home.
The first Paradise Lost film from 1996 ends right there. Fades to black with Eccles and Baldwin being chained and walked out.
Oh my gosh.
Sorry. There were eventually two more Paradise Lost films, as we have mentioned. The second one came out in the year 2000. The third one came out in the year 2012. Those two movies tell the story about what happened in the next 18 years and 76 days between the time that the boys began their prison sentences and the time that all three of them walked out of the Arkansas State prison system free men. Here's one little hint about how that happened for next time. One of their attorneys said after they were released in 2011 that, quote, it took one false confession to convict them and another false confession to set them free.
Wow.
And we are going to try and cram 18 years and 76 days into part three of this three-part installment about the West Memphis Three next week. So come back and listen to us try and pull that rabbit out of a hat. Next week, rabbit holes and rabbits in hats.
Wow.
Next week.
Good gracious. Thank you, Scott. Again, a very difficult story. You're doing a fantastic job with it.
I haven't even started on part three yet. I don't want to.
It's been a long road for you,
West
I know.
West Memphis May is, it's May.
It's very tiresome for Scott, too. He's working very hard on this.
I'm going to celebrate with a trip to the beach at the end of the month.
Good there for you.
Don't rob my house while I'm gone.
So, follow us on Instagram and Facebook.
Yeah. Twitter, not so much.
Send us an email.
Twitter sucks.
I don't know.
Say something nice about us on your podcast platform of choice, Apple Podcasts.
I'm distraught.
Share us with five friends.
Share us with five friends. That would be terrific.
Yeah, give us five stars and leave us a comment, and then we will know who you are. And we'll give you a shout out.
And unless we don't know who you are, then you'll get a shout down. So be prepared for that possibility. Is that it, guys? Are we done?
Yeah.
Good night, everybody.